Thank you. So it's nice to meet you, Howard. Thank you for coming in today. Just to start with, would you mind saying your name and, if you don't mind, your date of birth as well, please?
My name is James Howard Sturrock. My date of birth is the 24th of April 1942.
Thank you very much. So when did you actually attend the Harris?
I attended from 1955 to 1957.
Right, thank you.
I have got my last report here if you want to look
at
it.
Have you? Yes, we would, please, yeah.
I found as much as I could in my archive, which I had a job to. You should never really put a file in there with hooks on, should you? You know, it doesn't work very well. Right. There's all sorts of things in here, including pictures of my daughter and granddaughter, which shouldn't be in there, but never mind. I've got my old blazer badge.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Ever seen that before?
I'm not sure I've seen it. I've seen a hat badge.
Okay. Yeah, well, that was on my black blazer.
Oh, wow.
That was my first year's report, and that was my second one. If you want to have a look at those, I'll photocopy them, anything you want.
So how old would you have been when...
The first one, well, I would have been 14, I think. It's on there. And the last one was just before we left, so I'd be 15. I was 15 years and 3 months when I left. And at 15 years and 4 months, I started work at Leyland.
Did you?
Yes.
So what course did you do at the Harris?
Well, it was just the Harris Secondary Tech in those days.
Yeah.
I failed my 11 plus, much to my father's disgust. Went to the secondary school, and they said, you can go to the tech if you pass the exam, but we don't recommend you do that, because you won't get as good education. Which, quite frankly, was a load of bollocks. So I went there, and I got a brilliant education. I went to Leyland, and when all the new starters came, August the 19th, 1957 it was, they divided us into two groups, and because they had their own school there, you know, and they said the ones who went to the tech or to a grammar school, that side, those who went to secondary school, that side. So if you went to the tech or the grammar school, you went straight into S1 because they did their S1, S2, S3 at Leyland Malta School. So that meant, as I passed everything, you know, some miracle, I actually had my order in National when I was 18, which was pretty young. It all went downhill from there. But... So that's how I came to be here.
So what did your family think about you coming to the Harris?
It didn't bother. It was just another part of my school education, right. You know. Junior school, secondary school. My dad went to grammar school and he was a bit distressed that I didn't do anything, you know, and all the rest of it. Anyhow, proved him wrong, but there we are.
And did you enjoy the time at the Harris?
Yeah, it was great. It was very, very good. Odd things you didn't like, but basically speaking, it was very, very good, yeah. And obviously it gave me the sort of education that I needed to go into engineering, because not being one of these professor types or anything, I was never interested in history, geography and all that, which we had minimum amount, I think, to carry us through. But we had the maths was split into four different sections. It wasn't just maths, it was algebra, I can't remember what, trigonometry, mensuration, I've said that right, I think, and something else. I can't remember now. It's probably on there anyway. And I quite enjoyed it, yeah. I was always good at algebra. Don't know why, but I was. And I also remember now, going back to teachers, you had a fair list of teachers. There was one teacher who came, and I can't for the love of me remember his name. I've rang Jeff Littlefair, I've rang Jack Smith. He's rang a mate of his who came afterwards, and they can't remember either. But basically, when we started, we had Mr. Hulse, Jock Horse, you must have heard of him.
Yes.
And he took us for woodwork and something else. And then we got another teacher called Mr. Cross, who came and took us for woodwork. We had a fella called Bell, a little fella, Ding Dong Bell, who took us for metalwork. And he moved out of it and came back, I don't know what happened. And a younger chap came and he took us for metalwork and for technical drawing, in place of Mr. Tookie, who took us for that then, you see. Now, this bloke, whose name it was, I can remember him now, I can picture him. Well, I cannot remember his bloody name. And Jeff Littlefair, Dad can't remember either, so I don't know who he was. I've got all the other names of all the teachers here. You've probably got some of them anyway, but Jack will have probably told quite a lot.
Can you remember what he taught?
He taught metalwork and technical drawing.
And did you say he was a fill-in teacher?
No, I think he was permanent. Because they had a few teachers came and went, you know, when I was there.
His name might be in the list in the prospectus. We might be able to have a look at that.
I can't remember. I can describe him. He was a bloke about late 30s. And I remember when he took us for metalwork, I was making something myself, and I went to see him at lunchtime and went down into the downstairs machine shop and asked him about cutting speeds and stuff like that. I can remember the conversation, but I'm buggered if I can remember his name. Right.
Do you
want me to chip in with anything? You can see there on the last one, I got 90% from my technical drawing.
Right.
That's the second.
The last one. Oh, yeah.
Now, this chap, whose name I can't remember, he was invigilating at an exam that we had to take when we left. And he came up to me in the exam and said, I've just been marking your drawing results report. You've got 90%. He was quite surprised, so was I. And I remember saying that to him in the exam. It's very unusual for that, but he did, you know. I subsequently went to Leyland, got into the drawing office, and I bloody hated it, you know. There we are, it's one of those things. When you start an apprentice, you're on the shop floor, you've got overalls on, you're hourly paid and all the rest of it. My objective of the exercise was to move myself off to the staff. So I got an opportunity at Leyland. They took us for S1, S2, S3 if you're at Ordinary National. But those who did well in the second year, they got an extra day off in S3, with 2 days off, shortly, to do jig drawing, which I did. And a lot of it was drawing bloody jigs and fixtures, which I could not abide. Anyhow, we did that, and I was the last one to be picked. And they sent for me and said, we've got a place for you in the drawing office. And I said, where's that? He said, jig and tool drawing office. I said, well, I don't want it. He said, well, you did say that when you got there, if the position came up, you know, it would have it. Well, I said, I have to have. But I said, I don't want it, I'm not interested, all the rest of it. I want to work on vehicles, you know. And so that was that. Now then, whether it was nepotism or what, I don't know, but the chap who did send that to me was a fellow called Harry Glassbrook. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was the student gaffer at Leyland. And coincidentally, my father, excuse me, my nose is running. It doesn't get old. My father was a civil servant, and at that time, he was manager of what was then called the Labour Exchange, now it's called whatever it is, in Leyland. And he knew Harry. Now, I've no idea. I know they spoke, but I've no idea whether that would do me any good or not. But anyhow, that's what happened, you know. If you've got family in the trade, why not use them, you know? So that was that. We've digressed a bit, haven't we? Do you want copies of those?
If you don't mind, then we would...
I don't want you copying them at all, you know. That's why I'm rolling.
Thank you. What else have you got there?
Well, that's a picture of my daughter and granddaughter. Don't know how I got in there. The names of the teachers that I've got, have you got all of these or what?
I've got
some of them.
And there's one on there that's missing, and I can't remember his bloody name.
Did you get on with the teachers?
Most of the time, yeah, they were very good. We were quite well behaved because we were, I suppose you could say we weren't the thick end of the people who took the exam. There were 60 people took the exam every year, and they got 3 batches of 20, 1A, 1B and 1C. and there was no problem. Jock Hulse was a funny fellow. He was all right, but he was quite strict in some ways, and the other ones, he was a bit of a character. And there was another chap who came later on who took us for geography or history, and his name was Mr. Topping. And he was a bit of a, I don't know, anyhow. We always called him Spinner Topping. And the people in the 1A class, one of them was quite a wit in there, and he wrote a poem about him on the blackboard, which caused a problem. And it was to the tune of Davy Crockett. Spinner, Spinner Topping, blah, 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 you know. And it just got seen. The whole school got a telling off for that, you know. But nobody particularly liked him. And he was just an idle sod. He'd come in and he'd give us a book and he'd say, read this, read that, and then write something about it. And he'd bugger off for a smoke, you know.
Right.
So he was, I didn't disagree with him, you know, but he was just useless.
Were there any teachers that you really did admire or think highly of? Was he like an exception?
Yeah, I think so. They were all pretty good, you know. We used to have Mr. Burkitt, who was the head, and he used to take us for English, of which our English period in our class was the last period on Friday. And what we did then, he taught us, well, he didn't teach us, he recited to us the novel 39 Steps, remember that?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He had the book with him, and he never looked at the book. He knew it off by heart, the whole book.
I wonder why he did that.
I don't know. But it was one of those things, anyway. We'll digress onto all sorts of things, but you've heard about the Great Flood, have you?
No.
No, well. Class 1A, their classroom was opposite the door that went out of the quadrangle to the gym. You come upstairs, the classroom was straight ahead of that. And it had a wooden floor, which was an old wooden floor. It was very good. And at the back of that classroom, there was a sink. And the sink had a big brass tap on it with a square on. And Miss Mellor, who was the art teacher, who couldn't keep control, you've probably heard about this, on her key ring she had this big brass key with a square on to allow people to use the sink for doing a bit of painting. And so they used to use that classroom for other classes, because it wasn't Class 1A that did it, because Jeff Littleferry, who I know, he was in 1A, he told me it was another class, went in there to do art. And some bright spark got a pair of standard issue school compasses, you know, the old brass compass with a knob on the side, got that onto the tap, opened the tap, and couldn't turn it off. In consequence, the whole room flooded. There was water flowing down the corridor, which was a marble floor or something else like that, you know. And they couldn't get this thing stopped. And the benches were that way. And the floor was that way. Leads, planks. And the benches that you sat at were double ones. Big old-fashioned things with a wooden bar across the bottom. And the floor erupted as the wood expanded.
Oh,
broke all the bars on the bottom of these things, you know.
But that was quite spectacular.
I can't remember who was responsible, which class, but it certainly wasn't Class 1A because they'd moved out. Jeff Littlefair, who doesn't seem to want to be involved in this, he told me it was not their class, which figures because other classes used to go in there and use this sink facility at the back.
Wow.
Whether it's still there or what, I don't know. Well, they had to obviously mend the desks and they had to relay the bloody floor and let it dry out and do it again, you know. Which must have cost a bob or two, but
yeah,
they're all.
Yeah.
Were there any other incidents like that? We've not heard of this one. And
well, there was a lad called Salisbury. He wasn't in my class. I can't remember his Christian name. And he was a big lad, tall lad. And there was another lad who was quite small. And I think it was Mick Salisbury, decided one day that he would pick him up by the scruff of his neck and hang him over the top of the steps, which was quite a drop down to the basement there. And nothing happened, but Mr. Burkitt found out about it. And he sacked him, because he said we can't have people endangering their lives and all the rest of it. Then, of course, there was the big inquest, and he apologised, and it was reinstated. But we didn't have to mess about that, because that staircase, if you went up the third floor down to the basement, was a hell of a drop.
Yeah.
Prisbane Basin is still there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we used to go down there for the woodwork and metalwork. So that was the only other incident that I was aware of. I think his name was... It was definitely Salisbury. I can remember his surname. Are there any other names on there that you've not got or I got or anything?
No, I think I've got most of them.
You can read my writing.
Carol, I don't remember that name.
Who?
Carol, is it?
Miss Carol.
Oh, is it? Oh, right.
She was the art teacher before Miss Mellor.
Oh, okay.
And Miss Mellor was the one who couldn't keep control. And I was always one of the good behaved lads, you know, there was always a few in the class, weren't there, you know. And Mr. Burkitt was taking us for English one day. And in the, because they had so much trouble with Miss Mellor, I was sat there one day, and I'd not been larking about much, I'd just done something out of order slightly at the front of the class. And Jock Holtz came charging in through the door, and he said, "Are you having any problems, Miss Mellor?" Because they were trying to keep it, you know. And she said, "Well, this boy's being a bit troublesome," so he dragged me out and sent me to do something else, you know. And then when he took us for English the following day or two, he said to all the class, he said, "Now then, lads," he said, "this larking about with Miss Mellor has got to stop." He said, "We expect one or two of you." He said, "When it comes to Sturrock here," he said, "we're totally surprised," you know. Which singled me out as being a goody-goody.
Did you do things in the, like, after school, after class, with your classmates?
I didn't, know.
Oh, right.
Some of them did, because they'd come from same schools and all the rest of it.
Right.
And they were sort of more from Preston area, you know. I know Jack Smith did, one or two others. I mean, you've spoken to Jack Smith, haven't you?
Yeah.
Jack was in my class, and I had nothing to do with him, really, because we sat opposite each other. And he knew a lot of other people, and I knew one or two people that come from Penn with him, you know, so that was it. Because you weren't tied to be with them anyway, because you were just split up into three classes. How they split us up, I don't know. That was that, yeah.
So how did you travel into the college?
On bus.
Right.
And I used to go for lunch as well, in Penn with them. I used to get the bus, go home, but come back, yeah. Because they had what they called the refectory then, where you could have a meal, and it wasn't very good, you know. And there was also, which you must have heard of, the cafe on the corner, which was referred to as Septic Fred.
Was it?
Everyone but went in. So, because when I started on S1, I went to a day school, they shut the refectory, so if we wanted to brew anything, we used to walk down to Septic Fred's. And they always had Pyrex cups and saucers, which I never really liked. You drink after this, you know. Yeah. And you'd get a piece of toast and stuff like that, you know. A friend of mine, who was quite wealthy, he's died now, he was a millionaire. I said, "Do you go in Septic Fred's?" He said, "Yeah." So what do you have? He said, "A bottle of Coke." He said, "They can't contaminate that."
So where was that cafe?
As you come past the old tech building, the next left is an estate agent on the corner or something now. No, it wasn't, no. As you come down past the tech building, you turn left into the car park at the bottom of the main entrance, don't you? That used to be Kendall Street.
Oh, right.
And it was on the corner of Kendall Street.
Was it?
Okay.
Right.
So, that way.
Be that way, wouldn't it? Probably all been built on now.
Well, if you go down...
Not this here, way. Not this way.
If you go down from Corporation Street to Edward Street, go past the old building...
Yeah.
To where they've built the entrance past it now, down the slope.
Yeah.
That was Kendall Street. Okay. There were terraced houses along there and everything, you know.
Okay.
And there was the canal was at the bottom of there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. And we're going back a bit, like I'm 80, you know.
Did you do PE?
Yes, I was never very good at PE. I used to get out of it, I couldn't do. We used to go in the gym and climb up things and all the rest of it. And we used to do football. Now, football and me do not agree. Whether it's on television, whether you're playing it or anything, it's the most useless bloody pastime in the world. And we used to go to the old Harris Art Building. You know how it is, don't you?
Yeah.
And then down the colonnade, over the old tram bridge, and there were four fields on the right, which we used to use for playing football. There was pitch one, pitch two, pitch three, and pitch five, which I was always on pitch five because that were the nobodies, you know, we just didn't bother, you know. And I used to hate football. We used to go to the old art building there, and there's a big long, like a theatre thing, where you sit down ramps like that. We used to go in there, get changed, and walk across, you know. And Mr. Tookie and somebody else used to take us, yeah. And I got out of it as much as I could, you know, there we are.
So did you ever bump into the girls when you were in the in the building now?
No.
They were separated?
They were separated. They were doing other things, you know. And there was never any occasion when we met at all. Anything else you want to know?
Sorry. Were there any downsides in going to the Harris, do you think?
I can't think of any. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
The days were quite long. We finished about 4:30 or something, which is quite long those days, but we started about, I think, 9:15. But it suited me, that was no problem.
What kind of school did you go beforehand?
I went to, well, it was called Pembrotherham Secondary Tech then, it's called Priory now, just off Liverpool Road. I went there for 2 years and I failed my 11 plus, and I was at the junior school next to it before that.
Okay. And how did you find, so there was an entrance exam, wasn't there?
Yes.
Here? So did you, was that organised through the school? Did they put you forward, or did you?
We were told we could apply for it, and I applied for it. Oh, we had Dad help me fill the form in or something, and I got a request to come here one Saturday morning, and they sat it all down and did an exam. In the second year, I invigilated on one of them, being one of the senior boys, you know, and you just had to keep your eye on that was all, you know, a piece of cake. But that was all it was, and you knew nothing then. They picked the best 60, split them up somehow, and put them into three classes.
But it was, so people at the school told you about it, did they?
The staff at the school told us about it, I think. I can't remember. And I do remember the recommendation that we shouldn't go because we get a better education where we were, which, as I've politely put before, was a load of bollocks. Because we did. If I'd stopped there, when I'd gone to Leyland, I would have been 17 before I actually went into S1, S2, S3. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was past S3, I got the Open International. Mm-hmm. You know.
And you said that your dad was a civil servant in the...
He was a civil servant. He always worked for the Ministry of Employment. He was the manager. He managed one or two places. But at the time I went, he was the manager of the Labour Exchange, as it was called then, mm-hmm. which is in Northgate, in Leyland. It's a private building now, you know. And then he went to Morecambe and Lancaster. And then he came back to Preston, which was a big place, his deputy manager. And then he moved over somewhere, Manchester, where I went to live in Marple. So that's when I was on my own until I eventually got married. He was quite a clever bloke, my father, but he always had a big chip on his shoulder because he had a brother who was 2 or 3 years older, and unfortunately he caught diphtheria when he was a little lad, and he finished up with a tube in his neck and couldn't talk properly. He could talk by using a you know, and I could understand him because I'd known him all my life, you know, and he didn't fail his 11 plus, and my grandmother, who was very wealthy, she paid for him to have everything and all the rest of it, you know, and she more or less neglected my dad, because he always said there's people in my class who are doctors and surgeons and that now, you know, he always thought he'd never got the opportunity, which has got absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about, but there you are.
You say he was a bit disappointed that you failed the 11 plus?
Yeah. Well, he passed it, as you see.
Mm, okay.
Oh yes, he wasn't very happy at all. He says, "Oh, you'll finish up being a labourer at Leyland Motors." Well, I finished up at Leyland Motors, but I wasn't a labourer. I was a staff member, you know.
How long did you work there?
I worked there till 1970. And then I got approached to go and work for another firm, which you'll never have heard of, called Chiswick & Wright, who were the biggest exhaust system manufacturers in the country. We used to do original equipment for Jaguar, Ford and stuff like that. And I started there as a development engineer and finished up as one of the sales managers. And then I moved over to Bainbridge, which you might have heard of. They're aftermarket people. And I set up something there, and like a fool, somebody approached me, I left, which was the daftest thing I've ever done. But we do all these things, you know. I was quite an expert in my field by then, you know, so anyhow, don't worry. Right.
So, but did your mum work?
No. No, she never worked as far as I knew her. She worked, obviously, before she was married. And she used to work, she came from Wigan, Ashton and Makerfield, and she used to work as a seamstress or something at a factory in Wigan where they made gents' trousers. And if I got some trousers that wanted altering, she wouldn't bloody alter them, the bugger.
No. You know, she'd had enough.
Right, so, yeah, you know, so that was that, yeah. And my father and mother met because at that time he was working for a labour exchange in Ashton and Makerfield, and she must have been out of work, and that's how they met. All these strange things, you see. Yeah. Right, anything more about the tech?
What, you've got your leaving certificate there, I see. Is that from the Harris?
That was, yeah. That leaving certificate was just, there's three there, aren't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. That's the last one, which was the same thing.
Oh, right.
That's why I got 90% for drawing, yeah. Yeah. Taught by a bloke whose name I cannot remember. Nobody else can either, but there we are. When I left school, I was 5'2" and I weighed 6'11".
Wow.
And how old were you then?
15 years, 4 months it would be, wouldn't it, yeah.
When you got the place at Leyland,
yep.
did the college help you with that? Did
nope.
they?
The only thing that they did in those days, because there were so many jobs about for people, Harry Glasscook, who was the apprentice superintendent at Leyland, and another bloke who was the similar thing at English Electric, as it was called then, yeah. Came to school and said, please come and work for us. And I always liked vehicles and all the rest of it, so I wanted to work at Leyland.
So it's more kind of, we're looking for people.
Yeah,
and you
so I had to go for an interview and everything, yeah. And all the rest of it. And it wasn't a God-given right you get a job, but most people that left the tech without any problem got a job at English Electric, Gossies or Leyland. Mm-hmm. I mean, out of 60 people, there's always a couple of twits, aren't there? And, you know, but that was the situation.
Okay. And you went into an apprenticeship at yep. Ireland. And was there any further study as a part of that? And did you do that kind of at the firm, or did you come back here? Or
I studied S1, S2, S3, which got me my ordinary national at Leyland Motors Day Continuation School. And then I used to come here one day a week to get my A1 and my A2 to get my A-National, and I struggled to get the maths sorted in A1. I had two or three goes at it. I was, all this differential calculus and all the rest of it, you know. And I've worked in the drawing office, I've designed things, and I've never in my bloody life found anybody who's ever found a use for differential calculus. Simultaneous equations, you can understand that. I've used those many a time now because I was quite good at basic algebra. But a lot of the stuff we learned was totally, utterly useless, you know. Like learning Latin, what good is that, you know?
on the apprentice thing. So you came here for a day a week. Was yep. that throughout your apprenticeship, and how long did that last for?
It should have lasted 2 years, A1, it lasted more than that, because I had two or three goes at taking okay. me A1, you know. So that was a few. Once I got me higher national certificate, and I worked in the drawing office, which I absolutely hated, because the drawing office had big boards and all the rest of it, and there was a research department at Leyland where they did engine testing and stuff like that, you know, which was the same level of job. It was a staff job. So I went and saw my boss one night, the technical director, a fella called Norman Tattersall, And I said, I want to go and work in research, Mr. Tattersall. Why, he said. I said, well, I want to, not like drawing. I said, why don't you like it? Designing things and all the rest of it, all that. We've gone on and on and on. Well, he said, if you go into research, he said, you can't come back. I said, that's fair enough. 6 months, fine. Well, I'll tell you what then. He said, you can go in for 6 months, and if you want to come back, you can do. And I bet you'll be back. I said, no way. So I left and went into research, and as such, I was working, it's the same level of job, but it's much more interesting. You weren't stuck at the board all day. You've got engines to run, reports to write, and you've got fitters who were... The fitters weren't under you, they were under a foreman, which was just... But I could tell them to set that engine to pieces and all the rest of it, but they were disciplined by the foreman.
Okay.
It was a billet. So...
Sorry to keep...
You're all right.
So your apprenticeship, was that in technical drawing, or was that in a more general engineering kind of thing? That's impressive. So fitter cum draftsman.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of both?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because a lot of people later on in life, which used to annoy us, who'd get a degree in engineering, and they'd come in, found out on more money than I was on, and they come into research where I was running an engine or something like, you know, and they said, right, I'm so-and-so, and I want you to teach me all you know about the job. To which my reply was, you can piss off, I've spent all my life working to get to this level to tell you what to do. We'll talk about football, motor racing, but we ain't talking about that engine there. And they accepted it, you know. Sorry for the colourful language. I enjoyed it so far.
We'll edit it out.
So, well, of course you're recording, aren't you?
Yeah.
Do you want a photocopy of that or not?
If you don't mind, we'll take pictures or photocopies of whatever.
That was just a... That was one of the exams. Christmas term 90. These were some of the exams I took, and I kept the papers. That was, well, those are my qualifications. Ordinary National Certificate in Mechanic. I don't know which, some of these were the tech and some were Leyland School. And what's that? Ordinary Mechanical Engineering, Leyland, tech, they get it a lot.
Wow.
I think that's all there is there. Oh, that's the original,
oh, yes.
The original, yes. Certificate.
Alright.
I've got a copy of that on my garage wall, you know, and if people say, how do you know something like that, you know, I thought I was taught by Sir Henry himself, you know.
Yeah.
Sir Henry Spurrier.
So how would you, now looking back, reflect on your time at the Harris?
At the Harris, at the secondary school from 55 to 58, 57, it was brilliant. The higher national certificate, some of the teachers weren't all that sympathetic, and some of the subjects we had to take, which were totally and utterly irrelevant. That's one of the things I remember, you know. I mean, I still don't know what a differential calculus is. It's absolute... I took the exam twice, three times. I took it on its own once, just to prove a point. And I got 42%, which was a pass. And that was it. And there were 10 people took it, and 3 of us passed. It was that hard. Once you got into A2, it was much more sensible, you know. That was that. So there we are.
But within then, obviously you were able to go into the research area, and you didn't need degrees or stuff to do that kind of thing?
Not in those days. The degrees were very, very rare in those days. There were very few people I worked with who were my age or older, quite a lot were older, you know, had degrees. And it was only in later life when they started this degree business and they got people with degrees and offered them a job, you know, and they started them off in research or in the drawing office. And they were in the 20s, they'd obviously got a brain to be able to get a degree. But they had no practicality about them. which is real, you know, and I've worked with people who've got degrees in engineering, and they don't know the right and wrong end from a bloody spanner, you know. Excuse me, I do have a colostomy bag, so I have no control over breaking wind.
It's all right.
And it's filtered, so you won't get a smell. That's 22 years ago, I learned. Anyhow, right.
Well, thank you very much. Is there anything that you, anything else you'd like to mention that we've not talked about?
I can't think now. I don't think so.
Did you have any brothers or sisters that...
I have a sister who is a few years younger than me, and she went to grammar school. And again, my father was disappointed in her because she'd only got clerical jobs and stuff like that. And you know, he was very, very, very that way, my father, you know. And
did she come to the Harris?
No. My daughter came here, and she's got a degree, and that's how I came to be a member of the Illumini. I went to her graduation, wherever it was, and a chap who's dead now, who was a vice chancellor, I can't remember his name.
Brian Booth?
I don't know, could be. I was talking to him, you know, and I said, it's two generations. I went to the table, oh, you went to the room, and I said, no, give me your name and address. I put all the paper down, and next thing, that's where all this came about, otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Do you go to the meetings that they have regularly, the reunions?
I go to the reunions, yeah. Some of the lectures they've had, I've never been to those, they're right. Not interested in me, you know, because they cover such a vast range of subjects, don't they, you know. I mean, when I went, it was a technical college, you know, it wasn't a dentistry and doctors and vets and all the bloody rest of it, you know. So that's where we're at. I've two daughters, the other one went to Manchester Metropolitan University at Altergia.
Oh, that's where I grew up.
Is it? I'll
say you. Yeah. I went to the comprehensive school across the road from the college.
Oh, right.
Was she a teacher? Teacher training?
No, she's got a degree in some nebulous bloody subject, I don't know. Both of them got good jobs anyway, so they don't rely on me. The Bank of Dad has never had, well, they had to come to the rescue on a temporary basis once or twice, but they've both got houses, cars, everything's paid for. So I can indulge my savings in a Jaguar and a Bentley.
You've done my ask, did you meet your wife at Leyland? Did she work there?
No, I had a mate called Mike, and he was a Roman Catholic, as my wife was, which... Again, he's a load of twaddle, but there we are. And there was a woman having a coffee evening, or a sherry evening, at her house in Pemberton, some wealthy woman. And she said to Mike, she said, we think you know a bit about drinking, would you like to come and be the barman? So he said, yes. She said, what about an assistant? Oh, he said, I can find somebody. So I went there, and that's the first time I met my wife. And she was... the cousin to this bloke, and when I met her again, and we started going out for a long, long time, and falling out because of religion, which is ridiculous. Anyhow, we sorted that out and got married. So I was 30 when I got married, and my wife was 32. So we started off quite late in life, which gave us a bit of financial stability, you know. I was always a tight sod, so I was able to buy a brand new 4-bedroom detached house, and I've still got it, you know. So that's that, really.
Okay.
Right.
Nothing else?
Well, it's been really interesting, thank you very much.
I'm bored you to death, have I?
No, not at all.
My question, sorry, in terms of taking copies, there is a printer upstairs. Would you rather take photographs and then you've got them digitally, or do you want me to do the photocopy of the thing?
Do what you want with that lot.
What do you think Jodie would rather have?
My guess is she'd rather have electronic.
Yeah,
the digital ones.
Yeah.
I've got my phone if you want me to.
You don't want
that.
A copy of that, do you?
Yes.
Yes, please.
That's my old badge from 1955. HI.
So obviously there was a uniform.
Do we have a
yes.
camera?
I do, yeah.
Oh,
right.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's another thing. There was a lad in Class 1A called Woodruff, and he was one of the people who was a real scallywag. He was always getting in trouble. And
thank you.
The school uniform was a... a sports jacket or a black blazer with grey flannels. And he came in once in some flat trousers which had a stripe on. And Mr. Burkett pulled him up about this. Now, there used to be a shop in Preston, whose name escapes me. It was a well-known cheap shop. And he said, what are you doing with those trousers on? That's school uniform. He said, what do you expect for 6 and 8 pence from wherever it was, you know?
I think somebody was saying that the uniform...
And the other thing, Jack Smith, he doesn't remember this, I've told him about it the other day. He could be a bit of a rogue. And we used to have set squares, you know, 45 and 30 degree. And in Miss Miller's class one day, he decided to set fire to one of these. Well, they burned very well, you know. And so she sent him out to see Mr. Burkett. And he came back and, have you seen Mr. Burkett? No, I don't think he was there, and he'd never been. He's forgotten about that, but I remember it.
So the thing with Miss Mallow, was it just that she couldn't keep control of her classroom?
Yeah, she was a nice woman, really, but she just hadn't got the discipline. And Miss Carroll, who was there before, from what I can remember, she was all right, you know. She's one of those people we traded on a weakness. Are you with me?
Yeah.
You know.
It wasn't just that she was a woman doing art.
It was just that she was the sort of person who was a bit sort of weak in disciplining us, you know.
I've got questions.
You've got a question? Go on.
You're taller than 5'2" now.
Yes.
You were 5'2" when you were 15, is that
yes.
right?
When I started work, my mother bought me 2 boiler suits. And she turned them up at the bottom, and before I'd worn them out, she got me old overalls and she'd extended them. I shot up, and I was going on for 6 foot at one time. I'm 5'8" now, so the doctor tells me now, because you shrink as you get older, you know. But I really did grow. It was a phenomenal rate of it, you know. And
that's something that Jack said, that he was quite small when he started.
Yeah.
And sort of throughout the time, so...
Well, Jack's taller than me now. Yeah. That's it, really. Yeah. Because when I started work at Leyland, the first thing they did, because you were young to start it, rather than put you in the training centre where you learned the mechanical bits of how to do things, they stuck you out in the works, and I was with 3 inspectors, and my duty I had to do was take some paperwork from there, twice a day, over to the main office. Wouldn't happen these days, would it? You'd tap the computer and that's it. That was my main job. So I was in the old engine shop, and I enjoyed that, because I was only a little lad, and I used to go and work on the test benches with people. I got to know all the people, you know. And can't think why I started this now. Oh, yes, that's the thing. When I went there... I took over from a bloke who was going into the training centre, who was a bit older than me, and I was instructed that I was going to be the pie lad, because outside the gates in Northgate there used to be 3 vans, and the people used to go out there for the pies. Now, there were 2 queues, one for the people to get a pie and one for the lads with the box, and I used to go around in the morning, get the orders off all the blokes in the money, make a note of it, go to this pie van in the lads' queue, and anyway, this, that, and the other, put them all in, then I'd go back and pay them, and they always gave me a pie for my dinner, or 2 pies. And in those days, I've done it, I couldn't do it now. I've eaten 4 big bit of potato pies for my lunch. I got that many once, I took and boxed them up and took one home for my tea. But now, if I get a pie, you know, I'll cut it in half and have half at a time, you know. But, I mean, But all I can think of is a diet of pies made me grow so bloody big, you know.
Yeah. One other question, sorry. Yeah. You were James, you are James formally, yeah. But you're known as Howard. Were you Howard when you were at the Harris?
Always Howard.
Oh, James is your Sunday name.
Yeah, well, my father was called John and his brother was called James. My mother wanted Howard, so they stuck the James in front, which has been a constant source of bloody trouble, you know. I go to hospital and they say, James, well, that must be me, you know. I've got the doctors to call me Howard now. Many new ones call myself, hold on a bit, not James, it's Howard. And they get to know at the end, you know. And they've actually, they've underlined Howard on the computer. Oh, we've got, you know. So that was that, you know. I have another friend who's died now, he's called John Martin Fish. And he came here and did his HNC, I think. And he was the same. He'd go anywhere. John Fish, his name was Martin, you know. Nobody knew it was John, you know. Why they did it, I don't know. So there we are. Right, have you done with all this lot?
I think so. Thank you very much for those copies.
Did you take
pictures
of those?
I'm taking a photo of the badge.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. I think it might be.
It's faded now. It's
considerably old. These ones are coming up now as well.